Hello, undisclosed listeners. Rabia here. I have to admit, it is a bit surreal recording this new intro to our first few episodes of The State versus Adnan Syed, because it is just a mere days after Adnan was released from prison. And it has been such a long journey to get here. And for those of you who know us and know our work, know how much time, effort, energy Susan Collin have put in. And how deeply we've dug into this case. And it was pretty gratifying, by the way, to see some of the evidence that Undisclosed reported many years ago actually be included in the state's motion to vacate Adnan's conviction. And it was like a dream sitting behind Adnan and watching them remove his shackles and following him out of the courtroom. For those of you who are new here and just discovering Undisclosed, I hope this journey is one that takes you on a discovery of how lawyers and investigators unpack wrongful conviction, how to really look at evidence in a case, and what's the difference between understanding kind of the legal issues present in a case versus crafting an interesting and entertaining narrative. I also want to thank everybody who has supported us all these years. We could not have been here without you. We could not have continued Undisclosed and helping so many more defendants without you. Many of you have contributed to Adnan's legal defense, which basically I have used, you know, to pay his legal bills. I have cut those checks myself from his legal defense fund. And I thank you so much for that. On the day he was released, I launched in anticipation, I had it ready just in case it was going to happen. That's my job. A couple of additional fundraisers, shutting down the older ones, the Free Adnan ones to We Freed Adnan fundraisers in order to help him re-enter his life. You know, when a person is released from prison, they are released with essentially nothing but the clothes on their back. And we don't know what kind of compensation he might get from the state at any point, or if he would even get it at all. But we do know that he has a lot, he's going to have a lot of needs, from housing to a car to just, you know, living his life. And if you'd like to support that, there's a couple of ways to do it. First of all, you can go to the LaunchGood website. It's launchgood.com/Adnan Syed, LaunchGood.com/Adnan Syed, launchgood.com/Adnan Syed. And you can make any amount of donation there you want. Another way to support is by buying some new merchandise that says hashtag We Freed Adnan. And you do that by going to causeteam.com, C-A-U-S-T-E-A-M, causeteam.com. On their very first page, you will see a featured cause, and that is Adnan's merch. A third way is also his Patreon account, which the patrons have been incredible. For years now, they've been giving money monthly, $5, $10, $20, and all that money every month has been used directly to his defense fund and used for his bills. We also don't know if he's going to have more legal bills. He might. So if you'd like to be a monthly contributor, $5 or $10, you can go to patreon.com/freeadnan. I'm just going to keep that URL up and active. And that's a third way to do it. One last thing I'm going to say is that, as many of you know, Undisclosed wrapped up this past year, and Susan went on to start a new Innocence podcast called Proof. It is excellent. Susan doing her thing. Check it out. But I also want you to stay subscribed to this feed, because early next year, Colin Miller and I will be back in this very feed to launch a new Innocence podcast. Don't go anywhere. We are still doing the work. There are still people who need their stories heard. Stay right here so we can tell them to you. And thank you.
How about any school activities while you're here?
I played field hockey for 2 years. I played lacrosse for 3 years. And I also managed voice wrestling.
That's a lot to do. Do you have time to have a job while you're doing this?
Yeah, I try to manage my schoolwork and my after-school work.
That was the voice of Haymon Lee, filmed by Channel 36, a Baltimore County public school station who was filming for Student Athlete of the Month. According to the state, this filming took place on January 13, 1999, the very last day that Haymon Lee would be seen alive. Hi and welcome to Undisclosed. My name is Rabia Chaudhry. I'm an attorney and author of A Non-Story, and I'm here with my colleagues Susan Simpson and Colin Miller.
Hi, I'm Susan Simpson. I'm an attorney in Washington, D.C., and I blog at The View from LL2.
Hi, this is Colin Miller. I'm an associate dean and professor at the University of South Carolina School of Law, and I blog at Evidence Prof Blog.
So what do we know about Haymon Lee? Hay was 18 years old, a senior in high school, a scholar athlete with a 3.8 GPA. She played lacrosse, she co-managed the boys' wrestling team, and she worked a part-time job. She was popular, she was definitely hardworking, and she was a star of Woodlawn High School's magnet program. In October of 1998, Hay, while she was still dating Adnan, met and fell for a young man named Don, who worked with her at the LensCrafters stores in the Owings Mills Mall in Maryland. Don was older, he didn't come with some of the cultural baggage Adnan did, and besides, their relationship had actually been on and off since the homecoming dance. So, by the end of December 1998, Hay and Adnan had broken up.
And while Adnan began seeing other young ladies, Hay and Don had their very first date on January 1st, 1999. That day together, they drove to Aberdeen, Maryland, and had dinner at an Olive Garden. The two had been dating for almost 2 weeks on January 12th, which was the last time they'd ever see each other. It was the day before she would disappear and never be seen alive again. Hay spent the evening of January 12th, 1999, at Don's home in Bel Air, Maryland. When interviewed, Don recalled Hay being in a good mood, despite having argued with her mother about breaking curfew. According to Don, Hay left his home around 10:30 p.m., and she got back to her house around 11:30. Once home, Hay and Don stayed up until about 3 a.m. that night, talking on the phone. That same night, Adnan also called Hay at 12:35 a.m. for a minute and a half, in order to give her his brand new cell phone number from the phone he'd just gotten that day. Hay wrote down Adnan's number in her diary and resumed talking to Don, and then made a short diary entry about Don. According to Don, Hay tried to convince him to call into her school the next day, to pretend to be a relative and to tell the school that she was sick, so that she could get out and spend the next day with him on January 13th. But Don talked her out of it, so she said okay, and that she would give him a call the next day after her own work shift ended. She was scheduled to work from 6 to 10 p.m. the following night at Owings Mills Mall. That would be the last time, according to Don, that he ever spoke to her. In this episode, we're going to try to determine what Hay's schedule was on January 13, 1999, and who the last person to see her alive was.
Let's start, though, with the state version of her day. According to the state, Haymon Lee went to school on the morning of January 13th like any other day. She was on time, and she had classes all day. During the course of her day, she was interviewed on film by Channel 36 about being a stellar lacrosse player and a great student at the same time, part of which we heard at the top of this episode. At some point, according to the state, she was asked by Adnan for a ride after school. Later in the afternoon, Aisha saw her and Adnan talking. And then, at the very end of the day, Inez Butler, a teacher and instructor at the school, saw Hay leave the school after first pulling her car in front of her concession stand. Hay ran out of the car, grabbed hot fries and apple juice, and then told Inez that she would be back for the wrestling match. But you might recall that during Serial, someone else came forward, someone we hadn't heard from before. Her name was Summer. According to Summer, Hay was seen at school much after Inez saw Hay already leave. Summer says she remembers January 13th, 1999, because she was supposed to be scoring a wrestling match with Hay later that evening, and Hay told her she'd be there, but she never showed up. So, there seemed to be different versions of who the last person at school to see her alive actually was. Was it Inez Butler, or was it Summer?
Now, that might sound strange to our listeners to have all different possibilities about the last person to see Hay alive, but it's really not. In fact, if you're a film buff like me, you might recall a movie called Rashomon. It's It's about a body that's found in the woods, and four different witnesses with four very different stories about interacting with that victim before he died. And in fact, that movie was so popular, it spawned this term, the Rashomon effect, which basically says you're going to have as many different stories about an event as you have witnesses because of problems in perception, memory, and sometimes even honesty. And so, as we know as attorneys, that's why it's so important in a criminal case for both the prosecution and defense to really pin down the objective facts so they can determine which witnesses are telling the truth and which witnesses are lying or just misremembering. Which is exactly what we're going to do today. We're going to go hour by hour through Hayes' day, what we know of it, what witnesses have said, and all the accounts of things that Hayes supposedly did and where she was and what she was planning to do. We'll soon realize, though, that all of these stories can't be right. And beyond that, neither the state's version nor the podcast serial's version of Hayes' day can be right either.
January 13th, 1999 was a warm winter day with temperatures in the 50s. Hay got dressed in a black skirt, a nice blouse, stockings, black heels, and a white jacket. The last time her grandmother ever saw her, it was around 7:30 a.m. Hay was leaving the house and getting into her gray Nissan. School began at 7:45 a.m., and students began arriving at the school at around 7:30. The day before, on January 12th, Hay had been late to school, but she arrived on time on the 13th, and Krista remembered seeing both Hay and Anand before class on that morning. Out in the hallway, as they were heading to their first period classes, Krista says she saw Anand ask Hay for a ride later that day, and Hay said sure. Hay then went on to her first period, while Anand and Krista walked together towards their photography class down the hall. At 7:45 a.m., the bell rings for the first period of the day. Hay's first period was in Miss Schaub's French class. She wasn't a student in that class, she was a teacher's assistant. And she was probably a TA because she had a really close relationship with Miss Schaub. And in fact, Hay had plans to go with her on a class trip to France in June. A side point, by the way, is that we also know that Miss Schaub had an interesting role to play in the investigation of this case. And maybe that was because of her close relationship with Hay. Miss Schaub was heavily involved in the investigation at all stages. She was either self-appointed or was asked by the police to act as a go-between for the cops and the teachers and the students at Woodlawn during both the missing person investigation and, later, the murder investigation. Miss Schaub seems to have been suspicious of Anand from very early on and believed that he was not acting normally in response to questions from investigators and teachers about what he knew.
At 9:15 a.m., the bell rings for the second period of the day. Now, as we mentioned in the last episode, Woodlawn had A days and B days. A days were social sciences and B days were English. And Debbie had a clear recollection of seeing Hay in class, but as we said before, she recalled that day was an A day with social sciences, but we know from the school record, in fact, it was a B day. So while Debbie remembers seeing Hay, she definitely had the wrong day. Stephanie also remembered seeing Hay that day in second period in English class, and Stephanie is sure it was on the 13th because it was her birthday, and it was also the class where Adnan left a stuffed reindeer on her desk. There's a third person, too, who remembered seeing Hay during second period, and that's Inez Butler, the school's PSA teacher and athletic trainer. Inez remembered Hay coming to her room during second period and asking for the keys to the uniform locker so that she could change for the filming. But neither Stephanie or Debbie recalled Hay leaving class for any reason. Either Hay was in class, according to Stephanie and Debbie, and nothing out of the ordinary happened, or Inez is right and she apparently left the class early to get her lacrosse uniform to start filming for the news clip. Although there is a possibility that Hay was in class and then she popped out and nobody really noticed. You'd think someone would have seen that though, if she's getting up in the middle of class to leave. That would stand out more than her just being there the whole time, but it doesn't mean it couldn't have happened. The other interesting thing is that Debbie, in her interview with the detectives, says that she has no recollection whatsoever of Hay filming anything on January 13th.
There's also kind of a question, though, as to what time this filming took place. We have the video clip of Hay being interviewed, and there's the clock in the gym, and it's an action shot. She's doing a lacrosse move in the video. We've actually blown up the screenshots of this clock, and in two different clips, the clock seemed to be at 10:30 in the morning and then 10:35 in the morning, which would be right at the very end of second period. We also have a statement from the athletic director, Graham. He said that filming took place that day from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., and that a lot of students were filmed. So Hay could have been filmed around 10:30, 10:35, but that doesn't really mesh with the students who recall seeing her in class that day. So the question of whether or not that video footage was taken on January 13th, 1999 remains.
So now it's third period. For Hay and Anon, it was lunch period, which starts at 10:40 a.m. Remember, if Hay is filming at 10:35 in the gym, it's tough to see her having changed and being in the lunchroom by 10:40, but nonetheless, we have these witness statements saying that she was there. Becky, who we mentioned in episode 1, is a friend of both Hay and Anon, and she clearly recalled sitting right next to Hay at lunch period on the 13th. Hay was pretty quiet, according to Becky, and when she asked why, Hay told her she was thinking about Dawn. Becky also recalled a discussion of Stephanie's birthday and the birthday present that she was given. Finally, Becky remembered a discussion of the ride that Hay was supposed to give to Anon after school. Becky seems to have a pretty clear memory of Hay being there in the lunchroom on the 13th and does not mention Hay being late to lunch for any reason. And then there's Stephanie, who remembers about the same thing as Becky, that Hay was there at lunch that day. So we have two witnesses who place Hay at lunch about 5 minutes after she's supposedly in the gym filming for Channel 36. There is the possibility that Hay was filming at 10:35, changed out of her uniform, washed up, came to lunch, and maybe was there a little bit later. Oftentimes in high school, with the way lunch is, people just kind of filter in and out. But if she was filmed on the 13th, she would have had to have left class early, halfway through or even sooner, and then would have shown up again late to lunch. And not one person who recalls seeing her remembers anything like that. Another significant thing is this. If Hay was featured as Student Athlete of the Month and filmed that day, you would imagine at least one of her friends would have known. But none of her friends mentioned it. And none of the statements of Hay's friends note that Hay mentioned being filmed that day either. Especially because if she really had been filmed and interviewed on the day of her disappearance, that would have come up at the time, you'd think, at some point in time in talking to all these witnesses. And imagine this. If Hay had just been filming and then come to lunch right after, it seems like she would have wanted to talk about it, been excited about it, or at least have mentioned it. Instead, though, her classmates said that she seemed quiet at lunch, thinking about Dawn. Speaking of Dawn, remember that Dawn told Serial that on the night before, on the 12th, Hay was asking him if he would call her in sick from school the next day so that she could spend the day with him. If she had an interview that she was going to be filmed for and put on cable TV, why would she want to fake being sick?
Fourth period began at 11:10 a.m. We know that Hay had computer information class during this time period. We don't know who the teacher was. We don't know who her classmates were. We don't even know if she was there that day. The police never talked to that teacher, never tried to find out what she'd been doing during this time period. So while we assume she was in class, we don't actually know that for sure, and unfortunately can't account for this 100 minutes of her school day. The fifth period began at 12:50 p.m., and this was the last period of the day, AP Psychology. This is a class that we know was taken by Adnan, Hay, Becky, and Aisha, who was Hay's best friend. The class started at 12:55 p.m., but it turned out that athletic director Graham told the police that while the film crew had been filming different students from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., he saw Hay at 1:30 p.m., saying specifically that it was right after she finished filming. Well, if that was the case, Hay would have either missed AP Psychology or been really late. Here's the thing, though. Hay is not marked late for psychology class, despite us having other records of people being marked late to class, because the teacher of that class apparently took very close note of who showed up late and who didn't. In his notes for that day, the teacher had marked all the names of students who weren't there at the first bell. And that's how we know that Adnan was late, because he marked Adnan walking in at around 1:27 p.m. And another student, Adnan's friend Mac, was noted at walking in at 2 p.m.
It's also not clear why the athletic director thought he saw Hay at 1:30 p.m. when the clock in the gym wall shows the interview took place at 10:30 a.m. Now for the record, we tried to find this clip, the original, and find out if there's a timestamp or a date stamp on it, but so far no one seems to have the original copy, including Channel 36. So how do we reconcile these statements about Hay's TV interview, class attendance records, and her friend's recollections? Well, it's important to note that Graham didn't give this statement to the police until February 22nd, 6 weeks after Hay went missing, and weeks after her body had been found. It could simply have been a matter of him getting his dates wrong, and that Hay wasn't in fact interviewed on January 13th. Rather, she was in AP Psych class, on time, and stayed until it ended. So school ends at 2:15 p.m. with the final bell. At this point, there are multiple contenders for the last witness to see Hay alive. Aisha and Becky both report seeing Adnan and Hay pretty soon after school ended at about 2:20, and Aisha testified at trial that she saw the two talking. Becky had two versions. One, in her police statement, she says she sees Adnan and Hay walking in opposite directions, and Hay says to Adnan, "Oh, I can't give you a ride. I have something else to do." And Adnan says, "Oh, that's okay. I'll just ask someone else." At trial, defense counsel called Becky as a defense witness and asked for a recollection. Again, she recalled seeing Hay at about 2:20 p.m. She's walking to the door that leads to her car, and according to Becky, Hay says to her, "I have to leave right away. There's somewhere I need to be." Doesn't say where the somewhere is. So at trial, we don't have Adnan mentioned in the conversation. It's tough to say whether this was an oversight or some type of decision that was made by defense counsel. It's also tough to say whether Becky herself decided to leave Adnan out of the conversation and whether it was just a matter of the way she was questioned, because it's entirely possible that both things happened. Becky heard Hay tell Adnan she couldn't give him a ride, and she also told her that she had somewhere else to be.
So after Becky sees Hay walk down the hallway towards her car, according to the state, Hay apparently gets in her car and then drives around to the front parking lot, where Inez Butler sees her. After school, Inez sets up a concession stand outside the gym area where students can buy snacks and drinks. And in all of Inez's statements, she says that she saw Hay at this time. However, the details of what happened change during each version of the story that Inez has given. In Inez's very first statement to the police, she said that Hay had been upset that day because her mother and her were fighting. She wanted to call her dad in California, Hay said. Inez was also clear that Hay was not going to a wrestling match that day. In Inez's second statement to the police, given about a month later, she says that she saw Hay that day at school at about 2:30 p.m., and that was when Hay pulled up in the circle, left her car running, and ran up to the concession stand, grabbed a snack, threw some money in the box, and then left again. In this version of Inez's story, Hay was intending to go on to work that day at Lens Crafters. And in fact, we know that she was scheduled to work that evening from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. But Hay didn't show up, and she didn't call in. And that's the first time that Hay had ever been a no-show at work. At the first trial, Inez's story changes once again. She says again that she saw Hay pull up to the concession stand, but this time she says it happened at about 2:15, 2:20. She also testifies in the first trial that Hay did not pay for snacks, but that was okay because Inez knew that Hay would be back again by 3:45 in order to catch a bus to the wrestling match. According to Inez, the Woodlawn wrestling team had a match at Chesapeake, and Hay would be going with the team to score it. At the second trial, however, Inez's story changes again. This time, she says, like she did in the first trial, that Hay came up to the concession stand at about 2:15, 2:20. And, once again, Hay didn't pay for snacks, but that Inez reminded Hay to be back to school by 5 p.m. for the wrestling match, which, according to Inez, now starts at around 6:30 or 7:30 p.m. It's not clear why Inez's story about when the match was taking place changed between the first trial and the second, or why Inez's police statements reflect that she thought Hay was going to work, but by the time of trial, she changed her story and said that Hay was instead going to the wrestling match. And it's interesting that Inez's story is changing here, but by saying that Hay pulled up at about 2:15 to 2:20, the jury never heard what we got to hear in Serial about the 21-minute drive test that Sarah Koenig did.
If you recall, in the Route Talk episode of Serial, Sarah and Dana are retracing Hay's route to try to determine whether the state's theory of the case makes sense, whether Hay could have been killed by 2:36 p.m. when, according to the state, Adnan then made a phone call to Jay. The first thing to note is that, in the Serial episode actually, they don't finish the route by 2:36. It's actually around 2:37 or 2:38, and they claim that it's a minute or two, so therefore the test passed. They think that maybe they could have been a little more efficient, but yeah, when they run the test, it doesn't work. When Sarah and Dana run the test, they are stuck behind the bus loop, before they can even get to where the concession stand is. The bus is clear at about 2:26 p.m., which is when they go to the concession stand, and with that, they don't make it within the state's time frame. Now, in her second statement, Inez had said to the officers, "I saw Hay jump out of her car at 2:30. It couldn't have been closer to 2:15 because the bus loop had to clear first. That bus loop clears at 2:25. And the cops asked her, could it have been closer to 2:15? But she said no, it couldn't have been because the buses don't clear until later. And yet, Inez went on to testify at trial that Hay came up to the concession stand between 2:15 and 2:20, which is an odd change from her police statement, and it makes no sense given what we know about when the bus loop clears, both in 1999 and then in 2014 when we had Sarah and Dana conduct their drive test. But the change in her testimony is not odd, and it makes complete sense if you know that for the state's theory to work, Hay could not have been at school closer to 2:30, because the 2:36 p.m. come-and-get-me call couldn't work then. It could only work, and even then barely, if Inez had seen Hay closer to 2:15 p.m. So, that was the state's theory of the case, that Hay left school around 2:15 p.m., went straight to the concession stand, and was somehow intercepted and killed by Adnan at 2:36 p.m. in the Best Buy parking lot. Except all of that got a bit blown up when we heard from Summer in Serial.
Summer was also a student at Woodlawn High School, and as she was listening to Serial, she realized that she had some information that nobody knew about. So she contacted Sarah Koenig, and she told her that she distinctly remembered seeing Hay at school around 3 p.m. on January 13, 1999. She says she remembers this day because she was going to be scoring a wrestling match that evening with Hay. She was new to it, so she needed Hay to be there, but Hay didn't show up. So Summer was a little bit upset that Hay didn't show up, and for that reason, the memory is pretty distinct for Summer. It's strange that Summer says that she's never been contacted. According to her, she basically gets Hay to change her plans. Hay is probably not going to that wrestling match, and she convinces her to go. So it's odd that somehow she didn't talk to the cops. No one was made aware of her, that for some reason, this person, who's the co-manager on the team, isn't interviewed by anyone back in 1999. And she apparently never mentioned it to any of her friends or to any of Hay's friends. Assume you're a high school student and you have a friend. She's the co-manager on a sports team with you. You talk to her and, you know, basically get her to change her plans, and then she disappears and turns up dead. What do you think you would do when you find this out? Tell someone, it seems like. So it's hard to see how this story didn't come out before, back at the time of the investigation or the trial.
But let's play devil's advocate here for a minute. It's strange that in a case that takes place in a high school, a pretty large high school even, we're left with very limited statements from witnesses. In fact, we have police statements from just a handful of students, actually. Becky, Debbie, Aisha, and Stephanie. But there were many more students in the magnet program, and even with the wrestling match, you'd think the wrestling team must have had a coach, right? An adult coach. And that coach would have known whether or not Hay was going to be scoring that day, and whether she showed up or not. The real dearth of witness statements taken by the police is troubling, and may explain why Summer and many others were overlooked. The thing is, the police never talked to anyone at the school who wasn't in some way related to their case against Anon. They didn't talk to Hay's teachers other than Ms. Schaub. They didn't talk to the wrestling coach. They didn't talk to the wrestlers. Everyone they spoke to was either a teacher of Anon's and also sometimes happened to also be a teacher of Hay's or one of Anon's friends, which is why we can't even be sure if Hay was in her third period class that day. They never talked to anyone in that class. There isn't even any attempt by the police to determine that this wrestling match, which comes up repeatedly as part of Hay's evening plans, even took place on January 13th. But Hay going to this wrestling match is still part of the state's theory, though remember that Hay was also scheduled to work that evening, and no explanation was ever offered to explain this contradiction. Now, this wrestling match has come up a lot of times, but the weird thing is, the witnesses always seem to give slightly different stories. We've heard lots of versions about when it started, and two different schools for where it was supposed to take place. Summer said it was at Randallstown, but Innes Butler said it was at Chesapeake High. None of the witnesses talking about the wrestling match can seem to agree exactly what the match was supposed to be. So I started looking into it, and after reviewing some old newspaper clippings at the Baltimore Public Library, it turned out that there wasn't a wrestling match that evening. And that's right. The wrestling match, which has been part of the state's narrative since 1989 and was even accepted as gospel in serial, actually never happened. There was no wrestling match on January 13th, 1999. I started off just trying to figure out if the match was against Chesapeake, like Inez said, or against Randallstown, like Summer said. But after looking into it, it was neither. There was no match for Woodlawn. According to the newspaper records, Woodlawn had actually played Randallstown the week before, on January 5th. And on January 13th, Randallstown did have a wrestling match, but it was against a different team entirely. So whatever else might have happened on January 13th, Woodlawn did not play Randallstown. But let's go back to January 5th now. This is the big one. This is pretty huge. We have a match against Randallstown. So why is this such a big deal? Because of the Dawn note. Remember, there was a note found in Hay's car, written to Dawn. The police, the prosecution, they believe that this is a note that Hay planned to give Dawn on January 13th. And it's hugely important because it ties everything together that we've been talking about. The note mentions both the wrestling match and the TV interview.
The note is in Hay's handwriting, and here is what it says. "Hey cutie, sorry I couldn't stay. I have to go to a wrestling match at Randallstown High. But I promise to page you as soon as I get home, okay? Till then, take care and drive safely. Always, Hay. P.S. The interview went well, and I promise to tape it so you can see me as many and as often as you want." Well, now that we know that Randallstown played Woodlawn on January 5th, we also know that note was written on January 5th as well. What seems to have happened is that Hay wrote this note and planned to leave it with Dawn, who was working at Owings Mills Mall that day. But it seems from Hay's credit card records, which show purchases at Owings Mills Mall during the same time the wrestling match was going on, that she never made it to the match. She went to leave a note, and instead, perhaps, she saw Dawn and ended up staying there with him. And she never gave him the note at all, which is why it was still in her car when the police found it. And it also explains why Summer was a little bit upset, because she got stood up on January 5th, not January 13th. And the reason none of the students recalled seeing Hay leave class to go film on January 13th was because it didn't happen on the 13th. It happened on January 5th. All of this completely undermines the state's timeline. Inez was not the last person to see Hay alive. she's thinking of the wrong day. It also means Summer is not the last person to see Hay alive. And why is that important? It's important because, like a lot of people, when we listened to Serial, we believed Summer.
Summer thought she saw Hay, you know, around 2:45, 2:55 or so at school. Which takes us back to Asia McLean, who says she saw Adnan at the library until about 2:40 p.m. So while Asia is a great alibi witness from a legal perspective because she destroys the state's timeline at trial, she's pretty meaningless from a factual perspective because of Summer, who says she saw Hay well after 2:40 p.m. Now the significance here is, if we remove Inez and Summer from the timeline, we're back to Becky being the last person to see Hay at around 2:20 p.m. as Hay is about to leave school because she has something else to do and somewhere else to be. Which means that if Asia did see Adnan at the library up until 2:40 p.m., she's not just a legal alibi witness, she's a factual alibi witness who can prove Adnan's innocence. But then there's Debbie. Debbie, as we discussed last episode, was a friend to both Adnan and Hay, and she gave a couple of statements to police. In her first statement at the end of January, she says she saw Hay at about 3 p.m. and that she was on her way to see Don at the mall. And if you look at all the news reports at the time of Hay's disappearance, even at the time that Adnan was arrested, she is presented as the last person to see Hay alive at 3 o'clock as she's leaving Woodlawn. Then later, we have Debbie giving a second statement, this time in March. This is the statement where she says she saw Adnan at about 2:45 on his way to track practice. In that second statement, though, when she said she saw Hay between 2:45 and 3:15 p.m., she said they weren't alone. Instead, according to Debbie, there was a third person in the conversation. This was a person whose name is written as Takara in the transcript, but that's not a real name. According to Debbie, Takara asked Hay for a ride. And according to Debbie, Hay turned her down, saying, "I can't give you a ride because I have no time. I have to pick up my cousin at school." And also, according to Debbie, this is the only person that she recalls asking Hay for a ride on January 13th. Now, there's another time that Takara comes up too. This is after Hay's body has been found. There's a crisis intervention team that's sent to this school, and Debbie recalls Debbie herself, Becky, Aisha, Takara, and Takara's sister going to talk together to the crisis intervention team. And in fact, there's a second teacher who's interviewed at the school, and she also remembers this same group of students going together to the crisis intervention team.
So we have Debbie, Aisha, Becky, all key people in the case. They're interviewed, they testify at trial, and then we have Takara. The person who literally, according to Debbie, asked Hay for a ride just before she disappears. And as far as we can tell, she's never contacted. Not by the prosecution, not by the defense, not by anyone. Here's the exchange between Debbie and the police, though, about Takara. Detective McGillivary asked, "Did she indicate that she was going to give anybody a ride?" referring to Hay. And Debbie responds, No, somebody, I think Takara had asked, and like she had said she couldn't because she had to pick up her cousin after school, and she had to meet them around 3 o'clock, so she didn't have time, but no one else that I remember. Takara first appears on page 31 of the transcript of Debbie's police interview. But the documents that include that interview from the defense files, they end on page 30. In other words, Anand's attorney, Christina Gutierrez, didn't have the part of Debbie's interview that mentioned Takara asking Hay for a ride. And Gutierrez also never had the audio for it. But if Gutierrez had known about this, and then had just repeated what Debbie said about what had happened on the 13th at trial, that could have meant an exoneration. And then there's this. If something came up that day and caused Hay to change her mind and say that she had somewhere else to be, something else to do, the most likely way that would have happened is if someone had contacted her, which means almost certainly that someone would have paged her. That's right. Hay didn't have a cell phone, but she did have a pager. And we didn't ever get Hay's pager records, by the way. Either the police never tried to pull them, which would be shocking negligence in a missing persons case that only later turned into a murder, or they did get them and they didn't disclose them to the defense. And Hay's pager itself was in fact never recovered with the evidence. It wasn't with her body or in the car. If her pager had ever been found, we might know who actually had paged her that day. The implication, then, is that the pager was disposed of by the killer because it could have shown that they had paged her before she disappeared. What's also interesting, though, is that Jay never mentions a pager either. He doesn't mention it being in Hayes' car and doesn't mention Anand disposing of it. He doesn't mention anything about it at all.
So what we know now is that Hayes' day looked a lot different than we thought it did, than the state presented it at trial, and even different than it was presented on Serial. Though she had school, as everyone says, she certainly wasn't doing any filming for Channel 36 on January 13th. That filming took place the same day she wrote the note to Dawn, which also happened to be the same day she had a match against Randallstown. None of that happened on January 13th. It all happened on January 5th. A couple of other things that we know that we're pretty certain about is that at some point during the day, Anand asked Hay for a ride after school. She initially said yes, and then later, in front of a couple different people, she said, "No, I have somewhere to go. I can't give you that ride." That takes us to Debbie and to Kara. Well, we've heard a lot from Debbie, police statements, her testimony at two different trials. We've never heard from Takara. No one ever contacted her back then. Not the police, not the prosecution, not defense counsel. But she may have been one of the last people to see Heyman Lee alive. So, where do we go from here? We track the movements of the state's star witness, Jay Wilds. Next time on Undisclosed. We at Undisclosed don't have the words to express our thanks to all of you, our listeners, for all of your support these past 5 years. And a special thanks from Adnan, myself, and the rest of his loved ones for the support you continue to show him. Thank you to the always masterful Rebecca Lavoy for turning us into pros, to Mito Thalhan for keeping this machine running, to Baluki for our logo, and to Patrick Cortez for our theme music. And I want to personally thank, as we continue this fight, my incredible colleagues Susan Simpson and Colin Miller, who have put in thousands of hours of work on Adnan's case and who we could not have ever come this far without. Also, thank you to the many people who've told his story over the years, Sarah Koenig and Amy Berg and their teams, and to the lawyers who have stood by Adnan all of these years, Chris Floor, Doug Colbert, and Justin Brown. You can find all of our episodes and episode-related documents on our website, www.undisclosed-podcast.com, and don't forget to follow us on social media. You'll find us at Twitter with the handle @undisclosedpod, and we're also on Instagram and Facebook. And finally, if you've enjoyed us all these years, do us a favor and take a little bit of time and give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and iTunes.